The date is October 6th, 2001. This is Ruth Hendrickson interviewing Donald and Margaret Merkler for the Harford County Public Library. Well, we'll just start at the beginning, where you were born.
I was raised in Maryland. I was born on April 20th, 1908. And I started volunteering when my daughter went to school. I started working with the PTA. We both went to school here, and after graduated here, I went to Beacon in Wilmington, got business education. But I graduated in June and got married in September, so I never used my education until during the war. And that gave me an opportunity to have a nice job at the proving ground. During the war, I drove, first of all, for a colonel, West Point man, who was very much of a gentleman. And because I had to sit and wait for him while he did a lecture or a meeting of some kind, I had many hours. I sat in a station wagon, and with nothing to do. And he showed me how to do anagrams, and he bought me the Philadelphia Inquirer paper. Then all those, of course, the crossword puzzles, I had done those since I was in high school. So I was very well entertained because I could do something myself. Then there was a lot of other chauffeurs who were just like I was at the time. And we had one who parked on Saturday mornings at the time. He was a Japanese of descent, but he had a southern accent. He was born in Atlanta. It was quite an experience. And that young man has been in touch with us all of these years. He went to Atlanta. Then from there he transferred. He met a girl from California, and he traveled out there. And he is a postal inspector at this time. And every Christmas we get a letter in his Christmas card from us all these years. So I stayed with the government until the war was over. At that time, my daughter was a teenager, and I knew that I was needed home to sort of direct her rearing. Then I went into the March of Dimes. I did that successfully for the Harford County. I had six ladies, one from each one of our districts, who worked with me. And along with them, we accomplished a great deal of money for such a worthwhile cause. And I held that job for 8 years. It was a real job because there was many, many months that I had either attendance or reports or something to make up. The ladies that worked with me, I could name them, but I know I forget somebody's name, and I'm not going to do that. One I will mention was Mrs. Norman Lee. She had a dinner dance and made over $500 in Perryman, which I thought was fabulous. Now, everybody didn't have an opportunity to do that, but one of my ladies was Mrs. Evans. I can't remember her first name. She had just gotten out of the hospital, which I did not know. She had had a heart attack. And she was confined to bed rest for 3 months because this was way back when they did not know how to handle that kind of a sickness. So when I called her and asked her if she'd served, she said, "There's not a reason in the world that I can't use the telephone." Mm-hmm. And that lady from her bed collected $180 from the March of Dimes, which eventually from $700 in 8 years, we went to 15,000. Mm. And it was the actual interest and the hard work of these ladies who found ways to take money painlessly away from people for a terrific project. And all of us got citations for it. It was very well earned because I know that it was ingenuity of those people who brought this kind of money into Harford County. and we were very proud of it. Well, then I gave that up in the late 40s, and my daughter was going to get married, and I knew that I would have a lot of hay on me, so of course it didn't go into that. I gave that up, and then I had worked in the church since I was about 2. I was never the best, but I was a volunteer. And of course, the children's day was always a great exercise. We had a pastor's wife who was very much of a projector. She always had something going on, and we had very good rehearsals. Started the Christmas rehearsal in September, and that meant that sometime or other, everybody was there until the final production. I was an angel in one of the plays, and that's when I think I caught my husband.
Oh,
and I was an angel. But I went from that to teaching Sunday school, and I sang in the choir for 38 years. Val and I were community stewards for, I don't even remember how many years. We did that until he retired. Then we knew we were going to be traveling, and I gave that up. And let me see, I was chairman of all of the parties. I don't know exactly what my title was, can't remember. But the people who had anniversaries or wedding parties, I had four ladies that worked with me. And at that time, we charged $25, and they had the expense of the party, but that was what the church got. And that was a lot of money back in those days. And the ladies that worked with me, I had two that were decorators, and they had terrific talent. And then I had two sisters that I taught to cut the wedding cake. And I had learned from the little Baltimore Hotel. I'd been there for an anniversary, and I had seen them cut the cake. And so I passed that on to these girls. And we did that work for 16 years. I had written everything down so that even if I weren't there, they could have gone on and done it. Then, let me see, I went from that to, I attended the community stores, yes, we did that. And, I sold the Christmas cards at the proving ground to my friends down there. The directors, they wanted those real expensive cards, and I made a lot of money by being, just having the right thing that they wanted. And then there was a time that Kay Mike had given me a box of shortbread cookies that her church was selling, but she just gave it to us because we were such good neighbors and she wanted us to try them. And I took that box to work, and because I took that box to work, we sold over $300 worth of cookies for the St. Patrick's Church, and I got a commendation from their priest thanking me for the effort, and he said he thought it was very ecumenical. But that was a joy. Still have that in my safe deposit box. I felt that was all the thanks I needed that I could do that along with working with these Christmas cards. And Senator Cronin, who's been dead many, many years, he said there wasn't anybody in Harford County who could take money away from people as painlessly as I could. I thought that was really something. And then I had another man, his name was Pennington, George Pennington, and he said, every time I rang his doorbell, his wife ran and got her pocketbook. I said, what a nice compliment, because she could pretend she wasn't home. But I got them for the PTA and the church. They were members of our church, and of course we always had these presentations. And I don't know how I managed, but I always was on that kind of a committee. And I really have had such a wonderful life. I've had a lot of things that have been very sad, death and illness. We lost our daughter in 1993. She was Barbara Wooten. And She had left us 7 children, and they are all adults now with families of their own. And in our last count, there's 27 in our family. And we all are congenial, don't get together all the time, but on the special occasions, they're all together. Like when we had our 75th anniversary, earlier this month. And there's been so much joy in the things that we have been able to do for other people. And we know that it's been a privilege from our Lord that these things have come about. And I just know that the Lord's going to be with us. And when, no matter what has ever happened, I've always felt that the Lord was there near me. I've had 3 cancers, one in 56, one in 72, and one in 92. None of them related, no reoccurrence, all new ones, and I've overcome every one of them. I had a bad fall in 99, and that is why I'm so handicapped to go. But thank God I have a mind and a voice, and I hope to keep on praising the Lord for every minute of the rest of my life.
That's a wonderful story. That's a wonderful story. Did you think you got your faith from your parents?
Oh, definitely. My father used to say, we lived close to a railroad on Juliette Street. And my father said, never turn anybody away. It might be Jesus. And I, from the time I can remember,
yeah. That
was what I've always thought of.
What did your dad do?
He was a railroad. Mm-hmm. And he was conductor on the Pennsylvania Railroad until I don't know when he started, but in 1933 he was thrown from the top of a boxcar and the train ran over his
way.
And he was an invalid for 25 years before he died. He died in 1952, and my mother lived to be, she was 70, and she died in 55. And she unfortunately had bowel cancer. That was one of our alpha blows, because she was such an inspiration to us. My mother had a terrific attitude. She never met a stranger, and thanks to my father, we never know how many of us to stand our dining room table. I never heard my father say, this is costing us a lot of money, and it never mattered to me. He was a wonderful man. He was my stepfather. My own father was killed at the Mulberry Street Bridge in Harrisburg. He was struck down there. And he was killed, and he didn't even know my mother was going to have me.
Okay.
She had just been to the doctors and confirmed it, and he was supposed to come home that weekend. And, of course, he never came back. So 7 months and 2 weeks after he died, I was born. And he died on the 14th of September, and that was in 1907. And then I was 28 months old, and my mother married my stepfather, and he never was a stepfather. He was my father.
What a
wonderful relationship we had. He didn't think I had any faults, so you see, I told him very much. But he never corrected me. He was such a loving, kind father. And I certainly was thankful that my mother married him. When I hear of own fathers who do terrible things to their daughters, and I think how blessed I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a brother who was 14 months older than I was. And because of my mother being a widow, she had to go home and live with my grandmother and grandfather. So when my mother married my stepfather, they asked them to allow my brother to stay with them.
Mm-hmm.
But my stepfather supported me.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived right next door to us.
Oh, well, it wasn't too far.
But we really have been very blessed with so many things. And as I've always said, if I would not have had the support of the family, I would never have been able to have done the things that I've done in my life. Well, I know that there's many times I read joy out of bringing joy to other people. And even today, this is what my pastor said to me last Sunday. I said, I don't understand that I am so physically well, although I'm so very handicapped, I can't understand why I'm still here. He says, well, you're here to keep other people straight and happy. And he says, that's what you're here for.
Your work isn't done.
Sometimes I wonder, though.
Yeah, what's your fondest memories of growing up in Havre de Grace? The things you did as a child?
Well, of course, I was a Girl Scout. And we had Sunday school teachers in those days who entertained us in their home. I remember having a tacket pull at Mrs. Charles Silver's home. And what fun we had. Well, what a mess we must have made.
Sure. People.
She was so gracious. And then, of course, Vesta Sanders was my teacher as a little girl. And then when I grew up, she had an adult class called the Wesley Service Guild from Hattiesburg Methodist Church. And she was my teacher twice. And, of course, my friend. When we were in Florida, I would call her on the phone and talk to her. And sometimes I only talked 3 or 4 minutes, but I had the, she died when she was 96, and about 2 months before her death, I had talked to her in Florida. And we had come home after she had had her last spell and was very, very critically ill. But I did go see her, and I had the pleasure of being with her a week before she died. And she had such a terrific way of entertaining, too. So we had really, we had so many joyous times. But we sledded, we roller skated, and went on hay rides. Oh, that was a highlight of every girl's life to go on a hay ride. And we saw the harvest moons. We all bundled up in our winter clothes, didn't mind winter at all. And I just can't imagine today when all the children have to be entertained with such expensive things, toys. I can remember making furniture out of cigar boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I had a baby doll, and I made all the clothes, didn't buy any, made them. I was taught how to hemstitch. Let's see, I must have been only about 6 or 7 years old. And we had a neighbor who didn't think she was going to like us. We moved next door to him. And the people who had lived there before and had children must have been pretty naughty. So I was out in the yard, and it was a beautiful day, and this lady was hanging up clothes. And I said, good morning, lady, and she didn't answer me. And I said to my mother, who was on the porch, that lady must be deaf. I said good morning to her, and she didn't answer. But she was the one who took a board out of her fence so that I could come in the easy way after she got to know me. So I guess I wasn't a bad kid.
Persistent, anyway.
Persistent, that's right. And she was really a lovely lady, played the piano beautifully. And I really think she was the one that got me started to sing. We started singing hymns, you know. And I was willing. Whenever the, any like the lodges, if they would have something special, I would be invited to sing. And Adelaide Currier, who later became Adelaide Barnes, was my accomplice. And she was a student at Peabody, so she was pretty accomplished. But she was a neighbor, and we played together. And she would play these songs for me, and I was trying to think that. Shadows on the Water. That was what most of the people requested, I would say. Don't have an idea now. Even how the tune would go.
Do you have a favorite hymn?
Oh, no, all the hymns are my favorite. Some of the new hymns are so important. The words are so important. And to me, when Mrs. Stewart was the first director of our choir that I can remember, and she was the wife of the pastor, and she always said, that you should announce the words to such an extent that the congregation knew what you were singing, rather than the tune. The tune was very important, but she said when you spoke the words clearly enough that the congregation could understand what you were saying, that was when you gave a sermon that went along with the
minister.
And that's very true. And that's what I noticed with our choir now. You can understand the words so well. Because the tunes are very beautiful, but the words are many times prayers. There's one that I'm going to have sung at my funeral, A Love That Will Not Let Me Go. And Don and I, this is off the record.
Okay. Well, I know, I happened to go to the Bayou for dinner the night they were having your party, and I saw the stars. I said, well, I don't even know if we're going to get in here. The Myrtle's taking over the whole restaurant.
Well, we had a special up there today, or on Tuesday, and we had a friend who was going back to Florida, and so he asked us to meet him at the Bayou, and there were six of us, the way I love a friend from all the way. Robinson. And he said he got there early, and he said they told him he was expecting friends, and they said how many, and of course he said six. And he said they kind of hemmed and hawed, and they said, well, the murderers are there. He said, I got more treatment, he said, famous. I said, well, you know, that's really nice, to live in Henry all your life, and to have so many friends.
You feel so safe and protected, don't you?
True. And yet you don't. Because, you see, our proximity to Aberdeen, you see, I did not say when I went back to work, our daughter was married and she had two children. And they were living out in Concord Cove. And the baby was in a playpen.
I would, please, Mr. Murphy. Water would be fine. Just a little glass of water would be fine.
That's what I had. My daughter was, after she had the two children, we wanted them to try and get home. They needed $4,000, and of course at the time, I don't know why we had money set aside, but not enough to share with them. So I talked to the old mom, my mother and father. I said, I think I'll go back to the proving ground and I'll work and give them the money, get the money for their home. This I did, and after they got their money and got their home, I had such a good job, I decided I'd keep on working. So I had an experience to, they used to give incentive, reward, and we had 155 that needed to go to Africa. And they had to have a tag on them that would be weatherized. So I said, well, why couldn't we get linen and put the glaze on it, put the nomenclature under the glaze, and tie it onto the can with linen thread. So my boss said, oh, that sounds like a real good idea. And see, we had a shoe repair shop at the proving ground, so they put their eyelets in these tags, and those 105s went to get the best of the rubber. And I'm thankful, so I got an award for that. And while one of the persons, the civilian personnel who was working on my record, my 201 file, she didn't call me until after I got an award, and she said, Margaret, I see you withdrew your annuity when you left the proving ground in 45. I said, well, I never figured I'd go back to work. She said, well, why don't you pay it back? She said, you got a long ways to go. She said, you could pay $10 a month, because I think it was something like $1,300. And she said, then you would have those years of service. So that was 3 years of service that I worked 17 years, and along with those 3 years, was able to retire. I had 20 years of service, and President Johnson had said any woman who worked for the government for 20 years was eligible to retire. So the first day of April was the day I had gone to work, April Fool's Day, and I had 20 years on the 1st, I was 60 on the 20th, and I retired the 30th. And then I forgot, from then I joined the, I went to a Zone meeting in Baltimore with Glasgow Faithful and a group of ladies from the church, and had a wonderful life. But I had already taken annual leave for that. I did not know I was going to retire as soon as I did, but I had coronary insufficiency, and that sort of hastened my retirement. But anyhow, I did that on Tuesday, retired on Tuesday, and Wednesday I went to the Zone meeting, and Thursday I joined the senior citizens, which I became president of within 2 years, and then after that I joined the Ladies Auxiliary Advisory Board. And I always made sure I was home at 4 o'clock to make sure that his dinner was on the table. But all the time that I worked, I got up around 5 in the morning, started my day with the upper room, prepared vegetables, made a salad, made dessert, had that done before I ever went to work. Sometimes I was ironing. I always was doing something. But I said I had so many supportive relatives that made it very easy for me. But I had a wonderful time being the president of the senior citizens. We had a membership of 175, and we had to cut it off because we didn't have any more chairs. But we used to average about 90.
Wow.
And it was when we had the meeting followed by our...
Where did you meet?
Over in the social room. And we were in the Methodist church. And everybody brought a lunch. We soon had the tables we got. Then we had 3 tables of bridge. We had 3 tables of the pinochle. And 3 tables of 500. And a group of maybe 15 or 20 that would throw bingo. So we had a very, and then once a month we took a real trip, like 3 or 4 nights and 4 days. And we went so many wonderful trips. But our senior citizens, we would never have been able to do financially or physically, because when you go to a place and you're not familiar with it, it's very hard to see what the main thing that you want. Sometimes you see the things you're not interested in, and the things you'd like to see you miss. So it's better to go on an organized trip, which we were privileged to do for all the years that we had the group over there. And of course, it was a very loyal group of people, but age and infirmities had to close it off, and we were very fine. But we had so many fun times. And of course, after Donald retired, I worked 5 years. He worked 5 years longer than I did. Mm-hmm. He became the steward. He made all the coffee and the tea, and set up the tables. And when we would go to Florida, they would fuss over who was going to do what. But when he was there, they never had to.
Well, why don't we back up a little bit? You started to tell me he saw you as the angel. Is that how you first met?
Well, no, we went to school together.
Oh, okay. But did you like him when you went to school with him?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't.
Well, your brother did.
My brother thought he was great. And they did a lot of things together. I remember one time my mother and father got me for Christmas a baby carriage, and they took the wheels off of it and made a stool. Now you know why I didn't like it.
Oh, yeah. He's lucky you married him.
And then after he grew up and I grew up, it was different.
Did you get married in the Happy Grace Methodist Church?
No, because he was a jockey. The discipline of the church wouldn't allow it. And you see, that was unfortunate. Our minister was Harry Stewart, and he even went to the district to try and get a dispensation because he knew how important it was for me, but they wouldn't relent. But when we were married 50 years, we had a marriage vows renewed. Pastor was Bill Weber, and his wife sang all the appropriate music, and it was only supposed to be immediate family. And turned out there was about 80 in the church.
And we had a
Yeah, we had my maid of honor was there, and his best friend.
Wonderful.
Yes, it was.
Oh, wonderful.
Now, both of those
are
passed
the
very
meantime. They weren't there for a second. We had set down dinner for a second. We took all the names of the people who came to our 50th and our 60th open house. And one page had 17 people there. And that brought a tear to our eyes.
Oh, sure.
Because they were such good friends. And we could remember such nice times with them, but they've gone on to the war. So that was how we arrived at sending the invitations for the subdanger. But then when we lived, fortunately, but I never expected to live to celebrate our 75th wedding. So then we had to have open house again. And despite the fact that there was an antique show, spaghetti dinner at our church, and the Decor Museum was having a festival.
The
Boy Scouts had the spaghetti dinner. Yeah. And the Elks had a picnic. We still had 120 that signed our register. We felt very privilege.
Well, it's a privilege to go to an anniversary that the people that have been married that long by. There's not many of you around.
No. To think that we were both so physically able, that I said, I'm great when I sit down, but when I stand up, I have stroke following the accident. And it really has hampered my life. My walking.
Well, there's a lot you can do from sitting down.
Exactly.
I seen the paper yesterday where it was 50,454 people 100 years old.
Is that
in the United States?
In the USA.
Isn't that fabulous?
Well, I'll be watching for your pictures on whatever that is. When will it start, that's all the...
Well, you know, we contacted him and he didn't put on.
For your anniversary?
I know they didn't get to it. When we had our 70th, somebody, I don't know who did, contacted me, and he wrote us a beautiful letter of congratulations and said that they didn't do 70, but they welcomed 75. And I wrote to him and reminded him that the letter did not come back, and he never brought it back, but we watched. So I don't know why.
Well, I'll be watching for your 100th birthday. And they'll say, she's a lovely lady.
That's what they always say. Well, you know, when you smile, people don't see your defaults. And it's easier to smile than just to frown. At least that's what I think. I have my friend, he always calls me never told me more of this. And that was one of the reasons I was just like a pop out. From the time I was a little girl, I always had a gifted dad. Yeah. I remember when I was in school, an open exercise with the Pledge of Allegiance and the different hymns. There was always a scripture read and a hymn song. And I can remember getting up there with that flag while they were saying Pledge of Allegiance. There was plenty of kids that could have done it, but as I said, I was a volunteer. I don't know why I was, but I was. And I've enjoyed it, and I thank the Lord for the privilege that I've had of serving him and my friends and neighbors, and they really have.
Well, you're not done yet.
Well, I know I'm not done yet, but I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Only thing I know is the Lord promised to be with me, and whenever anything has happened, that's the first thing that comes, oh Lord, take care of me, and I know he's going to do it. I fell this past March, had 7 stitches put in my hand. This arm was black and blue from my wrist to my shoulder, and a gravy bump here on my arm. And of course, I had just had surgery in September. I was so worried about that. Just came through fine.
It's got more for you to do.
Well, that's what I like to think, and I hope I'm here willing to do it. But I know that this is off the record of the president.
Your wife has a tough story to follow.
I should have let him for a little bit.
I can't even come close to that.
Well, you were born in Harvey Grace also?
Yeah, I was born in Harvey Grace Street, down in Stroke Street.
Uh-huh.
Stroke Street down there. And
what did your parents do?
I really don't know.
Oh, honey, your father worked for Commodore Richards.
Commodore Richards, yeah.
He was a florist. See, he had a conservatory out there.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was the editor.
That's where Tidings' farm is.
Mm-hmm.
And he took care of the...
Ashley's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I grew up here, went to school, and they died at a young age, and so we had three or four little brothers, and my brother was a jockey at that time, and Mr. Garth had a farm down there, so the three of us went to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started as an apprentice, and I started riding the horses and so forth, and had to break the yearlings and so forth. And about 1923, I think, I rode my first horse in a race at Pimlico.
Mm-hmm.
And I finished second.
Wow. You remember the horse's name?
No, I don't. And I thought I always remembered, but I don't. And that time, about every 15 to 30 days, we had to move to another state. And from there, we went to New York. And I rode in Belmont Park, Saratoga, New York. And that winter, 1923, I went to New Orleans, and I rode a couple races there, and I didn't finish anywhere, but on January the 1st, I rode a little horse by the name of Jack Furman, and the owner and trainer is Sam Holman, and he called everybody honey. So little Jack Furman, who said, when I went over to the bathroom and got dressed, Mr. Holman said, honey, he said, this little horse, you're only doing a mile and 7 yards today. And he is used to running around a half mile tracks.
And when he comes to the turn, he doesn't have to change his stride. And so that means a couple lengths of a horse. And so he told me it's fast and you'll be in front. And said, when you'll go around the first turn, he said, you just let him run. And then when you get on the backside, he said, take hold and set him down the backside. And when you come to the next turn, let him run again. And he said, just study until you hear the horses coming to you, and then let him go. And sure enough, I won my first race and broke my maiden name.
Yeah.
And from that time on, I guess I rode for the governor of Kentucky, and I had a very good, successful season of life.
Did you make much money as a jockey?
Well,
you made a living.
Mm.
They didn't pay the kind of
money. We had enough to live on.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those days, most of the races was about $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are 18,000, 20,000 of us, and some cheaper than that. But we had a good life. We traveled all up and down the states, from Florida to Colorado, Canada. But I got heavy, had to reduce all the time. So.
How much did you, was the most you could write?
Well, they had a different a weight at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have a much higher weight.
Wow.
So it's, and they have a lot of things that the jockeys in ways that reduce by. That's steam belt and so forth. But in that day, we had to put on a heavy underwear and a rubber suit and a pants and jacket. We used to run for a few miles, and the water used to run out of our pants this here. But that's all in the past.
Don't do that.
A better life started.
Mm-hmm.
So I got too heavy. I went to my brother, but from my brother.
And from my mother.
Yeah, that's right. And after I worked there a couple of years, things opened up at Van El Martin, so I went down there. And I worked for me. I worked down there for 24 years. And I got laid off and Boeing needed some people in Eddystone, Pennsylvania, so I had two or three people I took up there and got a job for the same time I did. I went right to work. They were glad to get us. And we made helicopters there for the Boeing company, CH-46s and 47s. I worked 10 years there, then I retired. And then life really started living for us.
That's when we started to fly.
Yeah, that's right. And I senior citizens, and on Methodist Church, really, they had a part of the league there, and so my nephew and I and some other people in the church, we got a team in the league.
Bowling. This was bowling.
Bowling, yes.
Mm-hmm. Had you bowled before that?
Well, I bowled when I used to reduce. I used to dodge in here from the racetrack to the bowling alley and bowl a couple of games, then I'd run back.
Oh, dear.
And water was just run out of here. Like that. And the little story for them.
The bowling alley was the one on Ron.
Washington
Street. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How do you know about that?
Oh, because I've done other of these interviews. What do you remember most about Havard Base when you were growing up here?
Well, I remember we used to catch crabs down on the river, and we could catch some fish. And when school was out, we used to go barefooted the first thing. It was a nice life as a kid.
Do you remember the circus being here? I've heard a lot of stories about that.
Yeah, right out to where the ball team is, where the ball driver is.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about the Downey Brothers.
Yeah, and we used to go, they used to have ponies in the wintertime up at Lewis's Lane. There's a farm up there. And,
Dutton?
I guess Dutton's Rules or something like that. And, Bob Mitchell and Don Miller, Chris Popper, and myself, Fred Keane, we went up there and got on the ponies. They used to throw us in the brow patches up there, and we'd come home all stretched up.
Didn't think you'd make your living on a horse, did you?
No, that's right.
What was the racetrack in Avondale like?
It was a great racetrack.
Was it?
Yes.
You remember meeting famous people that came here?
Well...
There's a jockey, you didn't see them.
No, he didn't see them. They didn't work in front of
jockeys. You shook hands with a lot of people. Well-known people, rich people, and so forth. Road to road. Just a day or something like this. But, I got a picture here of my brother's.
It's my Joe Fisher.
You still have your silks?
No.
They're in there.
Are they?
Jockeys don't have silks.
Oh, it's the owner.
It's the owners.
Oh. Well.
That's my older brother, Charles. That's
and who was the best jockey?
Well,
who was the most winning? Who won the most?
He had the longest career.
Yeah. I won the most. That's my brother, J.C. John.
Are you all there?
And he's up in Rising Sun, he's been up there 5 years.
Oh, wonderful picture.
This year's monk here,
uh-huh.
His name is Miracle. He got the nickname as Monk because he rode a horse up in New York when he went his first race. And he lost his stirrups and reins and everything, and hanging on.
Oh my.
But he wound up winning anyway. So they nicknamed him Monk.
What a great thing.
That's Charles, Brown, and J.C.
I
want to tell you, there never was a place that we had an apartment that when we went back the next year, if I contacted them, if they didn't have a place for us, they found us a place. So this is why I said when you live a normal life, even though you're of a gambling profession, people respect you. We wanted to
But after we moved back here and we got settled here, I joined the Masons, and I've been there over 60 years, I guess, now.
Yes.
Did you do any duck hunting when you were out there?
Oh, well,
yes, I was. Yes, I did. I'm the one that started bodies of...
Well, I don't know what that is.
Well, see, they used to have what they call a...
Rolls?
No, well, before that, they had saint boxers.
Mm-hmm.
And rowboats.
Mm-hmm.
And they hunted them out of that. And they hunted the ducks from these things. But for some unknown reason, there was shallow water or something. But it was deep where the ducks were coming in, so I stood on the box with these body boots on.
Okay.
And that's where it started.
Wow. And how many ducks did you get at a time? A lot?
Well, back in those days...
Who wasn't a committed son?
When I was a kid, you would ride 25 to a person. But I think going down, you only ride one or two or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they still do it.
Did you do it just for fun, or did you ever leave?
Oh, yeah, just for fun. Yes. Mm-hmm. You had about 125 big boys out there, and you stand in the middle of it. And you have one with a little box on it, so you put the shells.
Wow. Were you ever afraid somebody's going to shoot you? Were you ever afraid somebody's going to shoot at you?
Oh, no, he's too far away.
Oh, okay.
They didn't get that close.
Didn't think about it because we have pictures of him in the water with these body boots, which would give you the idea of what it really was like.
Yeah.
So just say a body boot.
No, but after you said it, like, yeah. And did you cook all the
Yes. I did not know much about cooking when I got married, but I learned, and trial and error helped me. Then when he had his five-way bypass, there were so many things that he couldn't eat, and we had a very wonderful dietitian who was assigned to the hospital he was in, and she came down and she gave me a list of things that he should never eat and the things that he could eat. And she also gave me recipes.
Oh, wow.
Which was a big boost to me because, as I said, cooking was never one of my roles. I was a good cleaner-upper, and I liked to wallpaper, and I upholstered furniture, and I did all those kinds of things, made all my daughter's clothes when she was little. But I did not like to cook. When my mother was a great cook, I always told everybody that that's the reason he married me. My mother was such a good cook. He thought I was going to be a good cook. But after I talked to this dietitian, and she showed me told me how to fix things, I don't know, I got so, I really became a very good cook. I've had many compliments. Now, I'm not too much of a baker, but actual flavoring of vegetables. We steam all of our vegetables. And with thyme and basil and garlic. Don't use any regular, because it doesn't agree with me. And then we use a mild wine called Boone's. And she had told me that cooking wine is so heavy with sodium that she would advise me not to use the cooking wine, which I didn't. And we still use that Boone's wine. Over. Now he had the surgery at 88.
Well, she's kept you going, hasn't
yeah.
she?
That's what his cardiologist said. It's what he's eating and the way he's living his life is giving him that. Because he has strength that some of our grandchildren don't even have.
What do you attribute your long life to?
I really don't know, to tell you the truth, except that I think there's no reason going to church. And you get up in the morning, the first thing you do after breakfast, where you read the Bible in your upper room.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's good living.
That's wonderful. That's a wonderful story.
But the Lord has certainly blessed us many, many times, both of us, questions.
Have you belonged to the church over here? Are you the longest?
I've belonged to this church 81 years.
Wow. Nobody's beating that record, are they?
No, because I don't really believe there's... Now, Carrie Poplar, who was one of your treasurers last year, she and Boyer were signed. Well, Boyer goes to the Baptist Church, but Carrie does belong to ours. And, of course, she's a year or two older than I am. I'm not sure how old she is. But I don't believe, joined as when I did. The reason I joined at such an early age, the pastor there had a daughter with my age, and we were very good friends. And it was Harry Stewart who married us. And when I was a little girl, I had these vinyl babies every Christmas. And I always, Christmas morning, my father took me to the service, and he always baptized my babies.
I bet you know.
So then, but he didn't live to do that.
What do you think is the biggest change you see in how you face?
The tourism. Tourism.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think it's just happened over in town.
Now, we had the privilege to own that recording or that tape that they made of the old time. And we sat here and reminisced. There were things on that we had sort of slipped from our memory.
Mm-hmm.
They brought it all back. We had a most delightful time. And then Martha had gotten us that tape out of your library about the prestigious houses that we inhabited, Grace. And it was real nice because I knew about the homes, but I didn't know the history.
Uh-huh.
And it was really a very pleasant. We had friends, we'd go out for dinner, and then we'd bring them back and And
well,
it's really
inspirational. When we was kids, we had a lot of boards, streets, sidewalks mm-hmm. was made of boards. We had just boards.
Oyster shells, the roads were oyster shells.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you ever go on the steamboat, the boat that went over to
no.
used to go out? I've heard stories about
that. Was
that
before our time.
Was it?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard stories about that there. Audie Wilson told me, and nobody else seems to remember it, he told me that there was a boxing ring.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the new police...
Next to City Hall?
Yeah, next to the City Hall.
And Don and I both went to first grade in the City Hall.
In the old city hall. Do you remember when it was the Opera House?
Yeah.
It was the Opera House at the same time.
And you went around the back of it, come up along.
To the school.
Oh, okay.
Had big furnace in the room. Yeah. And you know, everything is so clean today in the schools, so polished. And we had oil floors. They oiled the floors every Friday when the kids were out of school. We didn't have flush toilets.
Oh.
Now, you know, that's hard to believe. None of us died with any kind of bacteria or anything. I don't know how, except for the Lord, I don't know how we managed.
Well, and did you do all your shopping in town?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Hard to get out of town.
That's right. I know I was in my teens before I ever got to Aberdeen or Perryville. That was to get on the boat. You used to cost 10 cents. To ride on the train in America. And I guess about the same when they went to
I remember Mr. Gathers. He was our junk dealer here at the town. And he used to go to Aberdeen and shoe his horses. And I used to ride out there on his wagon with him. Well, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, sure. Did he come around house to house with his wagon?
No.
Everybody took the things to
him.
No, they all always brought it there to him.
Uh-huh.
Rags, yeah. I think bones.
Everything. Yeah, right.
Bottles. He took anything.
That was early recycling.
Exactly, but they didn't call it recycling in those days.
Yeah, that's
but nice. That's what it was.
And years ago, I don't know if you want this on the record or not, but the stores... all the grocery stores were sort of mom-and-pop stores. Mm-hmm. So Mr. Clare, Mr. Atkinson, Mr. Torpey, Mr. Lover, Mr. Asher. Those were all stores that made a living through their stores for their families. And they would send mostly a young boy to get your order. Now, a long time he came on a bicycle, and he would get your order. And then he'd take it back to the store, and they would fill it. Then they had a horse and wagon that they delivered to us. I don't know what, in the summertime, why we didn't get salmonella. Because the meat was not cured.
Sure.
Pork chops and roasts and things like that. But nobody ever heard of anybody getting sick. Huh. And you know, to come, of course, now I have an idea that Mr. Clare, Mr. Torpey, Mr. Atkinson, was in only about a 3 or 4 block area, but in the summertime with the flies and the heat, you know, we didn't even think about that those days.
No.
I have to tell you, my father was a very wonderful, I want to say, intercourse. Anyhow, he could invent things. And we had icebox, and we used to get a 25-cent piece of ice every day. From Whitney, so we dealt with Whitney. I don't think we ever bought anything from Abbott. Well, I guess by that time we had electric refrigerator. And we put that ice block in the refrigerator. Then there was a pipe that dripped the water down, and you had to put a pan under it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you didn't remember that pan at the right time, you had a real mess. But my father cemented, I don't know how he did it, whether maybe soldered it, a funnel to the bottom of that refrigerator and then he threw a rubber hose onto the point and ran it, and we had, it went down about three steps, and then outside, so that was like a vestibule. And when he closed that door, he had a little hole for that water to run out. We never emptied a pan.
Wow.
For years, that was what we had, it had served us.
Uh-huh.
Then we got the refrigerator. First refrigerator came from Sears Roebuck. It was so beautiful and so functional. Boy, we really thought we were on cloud nine with the refrigerator.
You remember your first television?
Oh, definitely. Theta.
No, it was a radio.
Oh, radio. Oh, my. Thank you. No, our first television was a Lincoln. And we got it from Young City Car in Baltimore. And when, you know, they advertised that it was so inexpensive. But then when you got your insurance, your transportation, and your hookup,
right.
You always had about $300 or $400 added. So when I went down, I told him I wanted to know exactly what it was going to cost me the minute I turned the switch on and got a picture. And it was $300 more than the advertising.
Wow.
Oh, wow. I don't remember how much it cost. And yet the theta was the first radio.
And that was probably a big thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember my grandmother.
With a battery underneath of the, of the cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And you had to be careful with the battery acid dropped on the floor. Oh, boy, all those kind of things. But it was great. We loved it. Because the first set, you only could, you know, had to have earplugs to hear. I guess maybe that was 1917, 1918, something like that. And then when we got the theta, it had the speaker on it. You could sit around the room and be entertained.
So what do you think was better, back then or now?
Oh, I would never want to go back.
Wouldn't you?
No. I'm thankful for the memories. And I do know what people had were more honest in those days. You didn't have to have a signed contract or anything. A handshake, and you knew that that was going to be it. Not that way to die. But the plush living has helped us in so many ways. The automobile really brought us a lot of comfort, a lot of contacts. Remember Christmas and Eve. I don't know if you knew Wilmington way back in the 30s, decorated Market Street. I couldn't begin to tell you how glorious it was for us to go and view it. And every Christmas after dinner, Donald would put my grandmother and my mother and father in the car and off we'd go to Wilmington just to see those lights. How we found out about them, I can't be sure. But it was such an experience. Well, we couldn't have done that if we wouldn't have had a car.
True.
So,
couldn't get out of town unless you had a horse and wagon or a team.
Yeah. And very few people had horse and wagons in town.
But I guess there was enough here that you really didn't have to leave. I mean, you could make it without leaving.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, which you couldn't do
today. But people were mostly connected with the church. And we used to have festivals in the church. And one thing we had for a money raiser, they'd have a table set up for a month, from January on until December. And everybody who had a birthday sat at that table, and I think we used to pay 50 cents or something like that. 50 cents in those days was a lot of money. But my father married my mother. He made $90 a month. And that was for 6 days of work, and he was a conductor then. And my grandfather thought he was rich. $90 a month.
Well,
so that was a
nickel and dime to go to the movies.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yes, I think it was Mr. Wilson again. I learned so much from him. Remembered a story about the movie house and Mary Grace that they used to have big signs on the curtains, like advertisements. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah.
And used to be the girl played piano too.
Mrs. Wilson.
Pardon?
Mrs. Wilson, Miss Wilson, and she married Fred Bob. And when the movies would be real action, see, the movie would run, then underneath of it would be the print. So if you didn't read, you couldn't see. But anyhow, She would play that piano according to what you were saying. That was really a talent to be able to.
What do you think your parents would think if they could come back for a day and have the grace?
They'd be amazed.
They couldn't help but being amazed. First of all, things are so cultivated, lawns are so beautiful, sidewalks, the roads, the streets are so lovely.
There's so much money in it.
But a lot of the houses are the same. I mean, fixed up. They recognize the places.
Very true. We're very sad when we see the house that came in a Sears robot. It came in a freight car. It was built on Juniata Street, and I think it cost, I think it was $4,000. Then, of course, the contractor got huge money for building it. But it was numbered.
And all the pieces was numbered. It was numbered.
And it was, when it was finished, it was a dark green with white trim, very beautiful. And because there were two houses in the same block, and because they were on a line, my grandmother and grandfather insisted that my mother and father put theirs on the line. Those houses have been torn down, and there is our nice home, right so close to the sidewalk, with 200 foot of ground behind it. And every time I kind of go by it, it makes me feel sad. Because if it was dropped it back 10 feet, it would really give the house a very much better appearance.
And where is that?
Juniata Street. Mm-hmm. But when that house was built in 1990, and we lived there until 1944, and it was, the only reason we left it was because we had to have three bedrooms, and we only had two. Mm-hmm. So we sold it to people who unfortunately had bad things happen to them almost the first year that they lived there. And he had a stroke, the man in the body, he had a stroke. Their daughter had an unsuccessful marriage. Uh-huh. And we lived there with so much happiness, but we said, well, we were so blessed. Then we moved down to South Washington Street, and we built a home on the corner of Lewis and right across from where Kay Mike lived for several years. And Kay and her family were such wonderful neighbors.
Well, that's the other nice thing about having this, because so many families could have been here forever.
That's right.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, you can't talk about anybody, because if you did, you're talking about somebody's relatives.
Everybody's married to somebody else.
Yeah, that's right.
And it seemed like you were
a big family. And I would say this. Until 1940, I knew everybody in Harry Grace well enough to call them by name.
Wow.
Well, you see, through my membership, the chairman of the PTA, I got to know people that way. Then, and now, our church was always very active. But we were always an ecumenical, before we even knew the word, we were an ecumenical church. If the St. Pat's had a supper, we all went to it. If the Baptist church did, it didn't make any difference what church was entertaining for money. Everybody supported it. Mm-hmm. And that's a nice deal. Mm-hmm. And
the worst thing I think that happened is all the doctors' sons had a union anatomy.
Yeah, yeah.
Should be in one group somewhere, maybe a side street or something.
Yeah, couldn't be that way. Couldn't be that way. Because people didn't have money to buy the property and the doctor's school.
Well, that's three times as much as probably the work.
Yeah, that's true.
So when you were born, it was the old hospital, wasn't it? Where Brevin's was?
No, it was where the... that's another thing that's on that tape.
Hospital was just on the other side
of it, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
No, Brevin's was always,
it was
a vacant lot until it became the Colonial Hotel.
Right. Yeah.
And from the Colonial Hotel, it went to Brevin's.
Yeah.
But the old hospital was, let me see, what was the name of it? I cannot remember. But 1912, it had been a mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And they, a group of people bought it and turned it into the hospital. And of course, until, well, I think that new hospital was built in 1942, I think. But until that, the other hospital served everything very, very well. Because he almost lost his life in, what was that, 23 or 24 when you shot yourself.
Oh, dear.
He had a revolver in his belt with no safety on it. Maybe they didn't even know about safeties on the
boat.
But anyhow, when he stooped over to push a boat off the beach, it went off and shot him. And
got my appendix off.
Bet you felt stupid, didn't you, afterwards?
I want you to know, there were two bullets, wasn't there? One came out and one stayed in.
Yeah, one went all the way through and the other one stayed in.
And the one that stayed in cruised through his body, we don't know where, because back in those days didn't have x-rays
sure.
and things of that kind. And we were in Florida, and he was taking a shower, and he heard something drop. And it was that bullet came out of his body.
Oh, my God.
And that had to be at least 30 years.
Oh, my word.
Doctor said he couldn't do it better with a scaffold.
Well, he kept the
That must have surprised you.
Well, it sure did. Well, I thought it was a boy.
Uh-huh.
And, but it didn't hit anything. It just went on through.
Oh, my word.
But to think that that
was... I was in the hospital, and that's when Margaret came to see me.
Yeah, that's it.
I came here from New Orleans.
Uh-huh.
It was in the spring.
Uh-huh.
And so, the man who bought my contract,
mm-hmm.
he sent his agent here, and had to pay the bill. I think we owe us $300.
I've been 3,000 now.
Oh, luckily, easily.
Yeah.
Easily. Well, you two certainly have had an interesting life. And it's just going to keep on going, get more interesting, I guess. I'll come back in 10 more years and you'll have more stories. Well, okay, we'll do it 5 years. Well, I should thank the two of you. This is really fun. Really good fun.